You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, welcome into this Thursday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we talk about the Indiana Pacers 5 days a week. As always, I'm one of the hosts of the show, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News and over at 8.9 seconds. Today, we're going to talk about a game that I don't deserve to be giving this much energy to. The Pacers got thumped by the Celtics, and it was brutal, brutal, brutal. The Celtics hung 135 on them, so we'll get into why that game was such a bloodbath for Indiana. And then we have an opportunity that we rarely have. TJ Leaf has played 2 games in a row and actually not done terrible in either one of them. So we're going to talk about TJ Leaf for an entire segment, which the last time I did that was basically just like, let's not give up on this guy just yet, but it's not looking good. And then I want to talk about Tyreke Evans, because we have serious conversations about Tyreke a lot, and they keep kind of updating with the same information, but this time I am going to try to take a different angle and do a terrible job. But let's start with the Celtics game. So everything went wrong on defense in this game, and the lazy explanation is there's two. Actually, they're not lazy explanations because they're part of what happened, but the not great explanations are as follows. One is that it was a back-to-back. It was. They clearly had tired legs. I've said this before on games where they have 3 games in 4 nights situations usually, but I'll let it apply tonight because it was actually their 3rd game in 4 nights. You have tired legs on that last game, especially when they're all on the road. One was in overtime, right? So they've played a ton of basketball the last 3 days. The Pacers have. So they're not going to be crisp in their rotations and closeouts when that happens. And that's going to cater to open threes. I accept that. The Celtics shot 14 of 32 from three. That's 44%. That's a lot of the reason the Pacers lost. The second thing I hear a lot of, Miles Turner out, problematic. I agree. I talked about it on the pod yesterday. And in this game, it was the biggest reason it was problematic. It was the biggest game where you could see how problematic it was not having him of the 4 that he's missed. And now the Pacers have a 122 defensive rating in games he misses, which is so awful. But the reason I'm saying that those two things are like lazy reasonings for the bad defense to me is because the reason the Celtics had such good defense is the Pacers shot 42.9%. They shot 32% from 3, and they shot 64% from the line. And they turned the ball over 11 times, which isn't a ton, but they turned the ball over a lot. And they lost the rebounding battle. Basically, they gave Boston a ton of chances to get out in transition with their misses. They had a lot of long rebound misses, and their turnovers and losing the rebound battle didn't help. And Boston got a ton of easy points in transition. And that is some effort, but a lot of that is just not great offense either, and you have to realize the correlation there. Like the Warriors always have a really, really good defensive rating, and only half of it is because they're like actually unbelievable on defense. The other half of it is that they make so many shots that they're always playing 5-on-5 D. The Pacers had the opposite problem for a lot of this game, in which the Celtics were able to get out and run. And the Pacers had some good runs in this game where they actually were keeping up okay with the Celtics. Like mid-second quarter, it was tied at one point, and they put a big dent in the middle of the third. You know, there were runs where you could tell what the Pacers could do good stuff, but like at the end of the game, the Celtics grew their lead by like 7 points. And, you know, just like random times they went on these long runs when the Pacers started missing. And that was when they had a lot of inefficient guys off the bench who were missing lots of shots. So that's why I think the defense was so bad in this game. They just missed a lot, especially with the second unit. And so O'Quinn is just not a very good defender, we have figured out. They had no rim protection. This is their 2nd game in a row with 0 blocks. Can you believe that? But off the bench, Doug McDermott, 1 for 5. So his already not great defense is now being piled on that the Celtics are running out in transition on all these misses he's having. Tyreke Evans, who will be the subject of our last segment, actually played okay to me today. 15 points on 16 shots completely sucks, though. He missed 10 times and gave the Celtics plenty of great opportunities to go the other way and score. Corey Joseph, 2 for 6, same deal. And a lot of his, he didn't miss any layups. Like, Corey Joseph's layups are breakaway layups, basically. I feel like he doesn't really get too many within the flow of the set. unless he does that crafty move he always does into the basket. So Corey Joseph shooting jumpers, which miss long. Not like they don't miss long, like they physically are, like they hit the back of the rim. I mean, they miss and then they shoot far away from the basket long, which helps get transition off to the team. So those guys missing a lot of shots really hurt the Pacers defensively. And then Thad Young, 4 of 10. Bojan Bogdanovic, 3 of 9. Darren Collison, 3 of 7. Like, everybody except Sabonis, who was very good on offense in this game, 27 and 5. 20 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists. I know that sounded like 27, but it was 20 and 7 and 5. Anyway, a lot of missing led to really easy chances for Boston, and they took full advantage. And they also had a lot of momentum from their start of the game, in which Jason Tatum was really, really good in the first quarter. And just the spiraling snowball effect of, we're tired, we don't have our commander-in-chief on defense who's calling out the sets and the rotations and making it really hard to score at the rim. With all the misses, the Pacers just looked so lethargic on D. Like, the combination of all three of those just culminated in what looked like a really pathetic effort. And I have nothing to say other than that it turned out to be a pathetic effort. 135 is terrible. It's so many points, and I don't care. You know, all the reasons why they just gave up 135 I just named, those aren't excuses. Those are all bad things. You know, that's bad. 135 is terrible. They have nothing to hang their hats on in this game. They were never, ever leading. They looked awful in this game. Scoring 108, I mean, is fine. Like, given that the Pacers before this game, now it's probably much higher, only gave up like 100 points a game. If you score 108, you're like, okay, we got a pretty good chance to win. But they just looked so awful, slow as molasses on defense in this game, and they deserve to lose. Full credit to the Celtics for putting together a good game plan to force those misses, but nothing went well for the Pacers on that end. And I just spent the first 6 minutes on my personal theory of why their defense was so bad in this game. 7 minutes now. But I'll talk just some general guys. Sabonis was good on offense. Scalabrine on the NBCS Sports Boston broadcast was hyped about Sabonis the whole game, which was really funny. And then Thad was actually good on the glass and on defense in this game. Credit to him for that. You know who was not good in this game, though? Bojan. Only 7 points from Bojan on 9 shots. Got cooked by Tatum early and often. Bojan, first game in not double figures in forever. Something like 20 straight or over 20 straight in double figures for Bojan. That is now over, thanks to the mighty Boston Celtics. And to make matters worse, Tatum killed him for 20 points on 9 of 15 shooting. On the bench, I already named the four guys who were missing a lot and weren't great. But O'Quinn, 5 of 7 from the field and had 5 rebounds and 3 assists. His defense was really bad, but he did a lot of other stuff really well. Passed well from the elbows, hit a few jumpers, actually. I can't fault O'Quinn. He actually had an okay game. But the guy who is going to get a spotlight in a second and that I want to take this time to realize, TJ Leaf, had the only guy who had a positive plus-minus through three quarters. Did some okay stuff in this game. 8 points, 2 rebounds, 1 assist. That doesn't sound like much, but we'll get into why Leaf's last 2 games have been big in a second. But, yeah, this game was just embarrassing. The only fun part was the kids getting to play at the end. You got Holiday, Alizé, and Sumner in for the last half quarter, and none of them really did anything. Holiday had 4 points off from the free throw line. Alizé also hit a free throw. But, yeah, Sumner only had a turnover and missed a shot, and none of them made a shot. It was not a shining moment for any of the trio, but it was fun to see them on the court, and that is half the fun. Yeah, I would not like to play the Celtics on a back-to-back and third game in 4 nights again in Boston. That just, it was bad. It was really rough, and it's over. The Band-Aid ripped off, and the Pacers have a short travel this time to New York for their game on Friday. So, thankfully, that will be better. They have a day off on short travel. I think they'll come out ready to go after getting completely embarrassed in this game by a really high-profile team. You know, this is going to be all over the news. So, tough game. They're going to feel it tonight and tomorrow, but hopefully Friday they'll come out with some energy after this one, and hopefully Turner's back. I actually don't think he's going to play based off of what I've heard, but hopefully he's back by then. We'll see. But now I'm going to let the ads do their thing, but after that break, TJ Leaf time. Stick around. You don't want to miss TJ Leaf time, because it rarely comes. I mean, it says so much about me that I get excited for TJ Leaf time, but I mean, yeah, like all of you, you know, I had very little reason to still believe in the future of TJ Leaf. He had shown nothing this year. He had not been very good. He did not appear to be a useful rotation player. He barely showed any improvement, it felt like, over last season. All stuff that I agree is bad and suggests that he's a bad pick. Holistically, yes, I agree. But I also like to give guys 3 years, and that includes TJ Leaf. And these last two games have given me a slight glimmer of hope for TJ Leaf. I don't think his defense has been particularly good in either of them, and I don't care. My expectations for Leaf are so low that, you know, him playing a combined like 29, basically 30 minutes and not getting completely crushed and run off the floor makes me happy for him. He was 4 of 5 in the Cavs game with an offensive rebound, 4 total rebounds. He was a +4. His game score, Basketball Reference's little algorithm score to determine how well you played in the game. He had an 11-point game earlier in the year, but this game against the Cavs was still a higher game score. And I bet the Celtics game will be around those two numbers, too. They're about 9. For reference, Tyreek averages about a 5.5. So doing better than rotation player Tyreek Evans from Leaf is good. But just seeing him like hit these shots, because none of them are jumpers. He took a 3 in both games. He missed them both. And those were his 2 misses. He made every other shot he took. They're all at the rim. They're all on like nice little cuts or duck-ins, and he's doing that thing where he flies in for offensive rebounds pretty well. He had a nasty throwdown dunk in transition in the Celtics game, and I understand his defense is not good at this stage in his career, but last year all he did is do okay on the offensive glass and make shots from 3, just 3. Nowhere else on the court did he show any kind of touch or anything like that. So he just made a lot of threes. And this year, the three's not falling, but his field goal percentage is, or his 2-point percentage is up from last year because he's able to do stuff besides shoot the 3. And you can see that. His offensive rebound rate this year is up. His total rebounding rate is up. His block rate is up. His usage rate is up. Like, he's doing a little bit more when he gets the ball a little bit more. And that's all encouraging. And I don't, you know, his defense is still bad. But if he can keep up 65% finishing at the rim, he can get away with being an offensive rebounding guy with some floor spacing, then yeah, that's fine. And he's shown a little improvements that make me think, yeah, maybe you can play him a little bit. I don't think you can play him the 17 minutes you gave him in this game, and 6 minutes of that was garbage time. But 5 to 10, if you can find a way to squeeze him to sit Thad Young a little and save him for a stretch run, I can live with that if you get this Leaf. Now, if you get the Leaf you were getting earlier in the year, the one that they had to remove from the rotation after, right after November they basically took him out, he played big minutes in Orlando. Other than that, he had not played more than 3 minutes in a game since basically Thanksgiving. So, yeah, he had been pretty much yanked from the rotation completely. But if he can give you this kind of minutes for even just 5 to 7 minutes a game, I mean, that is big for Thad. And that is huge because Thad is so good. He does so many things well. You'd like to have him well-rested and in rhythm. If Leaf can give you non-terrible, destroy your whole roster and crater the chance of winning minutes, that's a plus for him, and it's huge for his development. They need to at least give him a fair chance. And if he can be something, if he can even be the fifth big next year, you know, the role of, well, I guess kind of it is him this year, but I kind of count O'Quinn as the fifth big because they play small ball four sometimes. If he can be the fifth big next year, even, that saves them some money in the free agency market. So these are encouraging 2 games from Leaf. This is what he could, in theory, be if he becomes a rotation player. So if the defense comes around, I don't know if it ever will, that'd be great. But just seeing these 2 games from him has made me happy for TJ Leaf, and it's rare that I get to talk happy stuff about TJ Leaf, so I was excited to do this segment. So let's talk about Tyreek now after a break, because I just talked about how I think he's been better after PRP, and now I regret that. So let's talk about Tyreek Evans. So I might download a sad trombone sound to play when I say, Tyreek Evans stinks again, and insert it right after I say stinks again. Just so it's nice and humorous. And then I can get my production points in for the week for the show. Those 4 games after Christmas I was super psyched about because I was like, yeah, hell yeah, Evans, awesome. This is what we wanted from you. You look okay scoring the ball. You look decisive. You're cutting. You're making passes. And then he was so awful against Toronto. 2 of 8 from the field. 1 rebound, I think. No assists in that game. Terrible. Cavs game, not good. This game, actually okay. And that is, this is the angle I want to spin this to. Yes, I think Tyreek is back to being what he was pre-PRP injection. So maybe those PRPs only got the pain down for those 4 games. Or maybe he just had a good string of 4 games. He's just not been good. And we're all watching the same thing. You know, he's missing all these layups and making some stupid decisions on offense. But I want to stand up for him in one way. And that is that his defense, I think, is actually okay. And in the Celtics game, you saw it kind of a bit in the end of the first quarter. It kind of clawed them back into the game for a minute. And I think that's what made me want to do this segment. He was in the game from the whole run, from when they were down, I think, 8 or 9 nearing the end of the first to when they tied the game in the second quarter. He and TJ Leaf were the only guys with non-negative plus-minuses at that point in time, which, fluky. And they all ended up negative because they just got killed. But his defense is actually okay. He's 6'6", and he's not slow. He's actually, I would put him probably above average in terms of overall speed in the NBA. And all of a sudden, you know, Tatum's missing a few here and there, and Jalen Brown's missed a few here and there, and Terry Rozier's missing. It's like, oh, okay, like Tyreek Evans is doing some stuff on defense, and that actually was pretty crucial in putting a dent in the run that the Celtics had made in the first quarter. And, you know, at first I was like, okay, maybe Tyreek's going to have a good game. He was actually scoring okay in the first quarter. That did not last at all. Very frustrating second half on offense. But the defense makes me kind of want to play him more. And I don't know if that's stupid or not, but I just want them to take the ball out of his hands. I want them to let everything on the second unit go through Sabonis and Corey Joseph bring it up. I know I hate Corey Joseph's dribbling too, but it's way better than what Evans offers. And maybe just have him be like an end of the shot clock off the dribble three-point guy, because we all see the same things. I hate when the argument boils down to just semantics over a player. Like, we're all seeing the same things. He's missing all these layups. We can all see it. But I still want him to play for that defense because it's good. And having a 6'6", 2 guard who is really hard to get past because he's quick, you know, his team defense could use some work. But that's a valuable thing. And I understand that the qualms of his offense, I hate it too. I want the ball out of his hands somehow. I don't know what the way to do it perfectly is on that second unit, but I want to find a way to have his role be reduced, but still have him be out there for his defense. What game was it where he was pretty good? They won, and McMillan talked about his streetball style. You know, he's got that dog mentality on defense, that streetball dog mentality, just be a nuisance, and it works for him. So hopefully that can end up translating to some positive impact on offense if they could alter his role maybe a little bit or something. I don't know what it entails, and his offense is so frustrating that I understand the calls to take him out of the rotation, and Holiday's development at this point is more important than what he's offering on offense. But his defense makes me want to keep him out there, and I understand that other people don't. I understand why. Maybe he shouldn't play anymore. That is what it is, but I'd like the 6'6", 220 shooting guard who can run with the opposing team's ball handlers and do a good job on that end of the floor. And his defense tonight was good enough to make me say that. And against Toronto, he had a few flubs. But I think against Cleveland, he was a pretty good on D2. And all season long, we've seen overall a higher percentage of his body of work on the defensive end has been positive. I think his defensive box plus minus is like 0.4 or something right now. It was 0.4 a few days ago, at least. I don't have his B-ball ref page up in front of me, but that is what I want from Evans going forward. A much reduced offensive role. Like, his usage is like the third highest on the team, which is because he's playing with the second unit. But still, I want his usage around like 20%, 18%, something like that, and his defense to be what he exerts all his effort doing. That's all I wanted to do for my unique Tyreek take. He's very frustrating on offense. I'm sick of it. He's actually encouraging me on defense. I want more of it. So yeah, thank you guys for tuning in after this frustrating game. But I hope that you want to hear more Pacers talk all the time. That's why we do these episodes every day. Adam will be on tomorrow. I don't know what he's talking about besides that the Knicks will be one of the segments in it. And he'll be out on this weekend, too, to talk about that game and what's coming up. And then we'll be back for a weekly show next Monday. Thank you guys for tuning in to today's Locked On Pacers podcast. Check me out on Twitter, @TEastNBA, the podcast @LockedOnPacers, and have a great rest of your day.